Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. We'll just let it be. Na, 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl. Just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long for their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Let it be.
Welcome to Missing Pages of History Radio. That is so true that the world will not get better if we just let it be. We got to make the change. This is one reason why we created the radio program Missing Pages of History. We want to make the world a better place for all of humanity. We welcome you to this program, which today the theme is people who have made a difference in the past and present. That's right, people who have made a difference in the past and in the present. That's the theme for our program. The order of the day, we will have give you something to think about, followed by Black Mini Facts. After those two segments, we will do a special tribute to Emmanuel D. Joyner. And following Emmanuel D. Joyner tribute, we will have word from the hip-hop community from Sister Elizabeth, and then we will discuss person of the community with Brother Haywood Watkins, followed by the continuation of the theme with Brother Marion Smith. So that's the order for the day of this program. Like always, we're here to serve our underserved communities, and we're going to get started with MPH by giving you something to think about. Now, you know, often when people talk about freedom, people have different conceptions of freedom. We'd like to just give you something to think about real quickly and think about these concepts of freedom, if they may apply in your life. These concepts are, one, he only earns his freedom and his life who takes them every day by storm. That is by Johann Wolfgang Goethe. You see, he only earns his freedom and his life who takes them every day by storm. Another concept of freedom is by Buddha, who stated, no one outside of ourselves can rule us inwardly. When we know this, we become free. Think about that. Let me read that one more time. He stated that no one outside of ourselves can rule us inwardly where we notice we become free. Now, how do these definitions apply to your understanding of what is freedom? Think about that. While you think about that, right now, what we're going to do, if we're going to bring in our contributor and member, we bring in Susie, and she can share with you a little bit of a black mini fact for today's program. Susie, we'd like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History. What black mini fact do you have for our listening audience today?
Good evening. Hi. I have a black mini fact coming from the African American Heritage, August 27th. Calendar, and it's on science, technology, and innovation. And the individual I'm doing today is Thomas Day. Exhibited a natural ability for woodworking at an early age. Sometime after 1822, Day started his own furniture shop in Milton, North Carolina, and went on to become one of the most respected furniture makers in the South. An incredible feat for an African-American before the Civil War. Wealthy plantation owners and two governors requested pieces, and the University of Carolina hired Day to provide the woodwork for one of the original buildings at Chapel Hill. His use of steam-powered tools and mass production techniques made him a pioneer in the industry, and this is a black mini fact for August 2019.
I'd like to thank you, Susan, for your excellent black mini fact for today. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to quickly pause for this call. So when we come back, we're going to have a tribute to Emmanuel DeJournal. We'll be right back, and you are listening to Missing Pages of History. Welcome you back to Missing Pages of History Radio. That is right. The greatest love of all comes from within. And we would like to share our love today for a very special young man who made his transition. He made his transition last year, and he was a very important personality worker and member of MPH, and his name was Emmanuel D. Joyner. He made a transition on August 22nd, 2018. Mr. Joyner, one of the major players that helped to initiate and create this particular radio show and to develop MPH. And what we want to do at this time is give our proper respects and tribute to the life and the commitment that Mr. Joyner has made and has played a role in building our communities to make it a better community. And to talk about Mr. Joyner's legacy, we have his brother online, Alexander Joyner. He will talk a little bit about Mr. J's legacy. And Mr. Alexander, we'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio.
Welcome, and thank you.
You know, Mr. Alexander, when we, if you got the phone on the speakerphone, can you put it on regular, take out the speaker so you won't get the feedback? You get some feedback. Just put it on regular phone. Take out the speaker, please.
Okay.
Mr. Alexander, one of the things about Emmanuel Joyner, when we think about his legacy that he left and how he had contributed to our communities and made it better, what would you share with our audience in that capacity of how you remember the legacy of Mr. Joyner, Emmanuel Joyner?
Okay. If you and your audience will give me just a minute, I think I have something especially prepared for you.
Okay.
In memory of a warrior, family tribute to Mission Pages for Emmanuel D. Joyner. On behalf of Jesse, John, Carver, Bessie, Maxine, Eva, Mary, Renee, Alexander, and Krikor, the sibling family of Emmanuel D. Joyner, we continue to thank the listeners and callers who had the opportunity to interact with him, who offered their final respects of sympathy in his transition of life to eternity, August 22nd, 2018. I appreciate the opportunity from Mr. Lee Robinson and Mission Pages of History to allow me to make these remarks on behalf of the family of Emmanuel today, marking the passing of a year since his internment. His wife, Retha, Mrs. J, preceded him in death on April 5th, 2017. The family has been shown much compassion and sympathy by many friends and associates that Emmanuel knew. His daughters, Tanya, Raquel, and Celeste, and stepson, Fitzgerald, continue to appreciate all that was done on his behalf by those who loved and cared for him. You were all God sent. Your acts of kindness were priceless and heartfelt by the family. We thank Mr. Robinson and the staff for their love and support in our time of continuing grief. Missing Pages gave my brother a forum to discuss with the community of callers seeking advice and information. And now we miss that guidance by messenger of knowledge, Emmanuel Joyner. For the callers who sought advice, explanation, and mentorship, there were topics ranging from how to start and manage a business to the path of financial success, how to improve one's credit score, the continuing cost of medical care, and the medicines that have an effect on our bodies, the pitfalls of marriage and divorce, the topic of child support and child custody, the vice of starting nonprofits to give back to the community, the importance of increasing benefits for veterans and older Americans, the need for a better incarcerational and judicial system without privatization, a better college educational system that doesn't come with a massive student loan debt to repay for years. Emmanuel also warned us of candidates who had only had an agenda to help promote themselves, and he often spoke out against them. Now leaders with ignorance, hate, and bigotry are trying to turn facts to fiction and are destroying the historical truth and the political basis of believing in them. The responsibility of Congress and the courts have turned their backs on the American people whom they swore to protect. Now America is more divided than ever today. If alive today, Manuel would say that certain segments of the nation are in pursuit of an agenda not beneficial for the poor, the sick, the uneducated, the elderly, the military, immigrants, and the incarcerated. He often reminded us that we are the ones to change all the hate and untruths and to build trust among each other. Emmanuel was entrusted with a duty to educate us all about the true facts of life and how to live in abundance of God's many earthly blessings. In 1874, as a civil rights bill was being debated, Alabama's Republican Senator Charles Hayes, a wealthy, white, former slave owner, made an eloquent and stirring speech before the United States Congress. Senator Hayes stated, "I'm aware, sir, that the hate of the ignorant and the scorn of the untutored would be invoked against me. All the things are sources of profound regret, but they shall not deter me from the faithful discharge and sacred observance of a duty which God, reason, and conscience tells me is right. For the first time, the fact is discovered that the Negro, who molded our fortunes, built our railroads, erected our palatial mansions, and toil for our bread is a curse upon the face of the earth and not entitled to the protection of society. So set free by federal power, cut adrift upon the cold charities of an inhuman world in ignorance and penury that they did not bring upon themselves. Struggling against adverse storms and winds of hate, in my opinion, sir, the colored race has set an example that fairly entitles them to the plaudit of well done, you good and faithful servants." As a result of his speech, the bill was eventually passed in 1875. It reaffirmed the rights of African Americans in public transportation and accommodations in the U.S. It would be 82 years before another civil rights bill was approved by Congress. My brother believes, as Senator Hayes did, that the African slaves were brought here in chains against their will to America. They had suffered kidnappings, whippings, family separations, illiteracy, poverty, and the atrocities brought upon them through slavery. They helped build the resources of the great American white economy and had fought in every war as a defender of freedom, where it was not given it equally as the whites by the U.S. Constitution. The African American earned by God reason and conscience their freedom as intelligent, distinguished, and humble law-abiding citizens. Our brother Emanuel gave us a torch to be passed on. Let us all now be good and faithful servants to our country, families, our jobs, and needs and concerns of others who have made a start to invest in the American dream. Today, we all thank you, Emanuel, for the knowledge and inspiration you gave us, as our ancestors did for centuries. And a little personal note, I'd like to just read this real quickly. Dan had a smile from Mom. No rest for me today as the rain falls so heavily. My tears. It doesn't seem a year has passed, but time waits for no man. I miss you, Dan. I have thought of you often this past year. Yes, I miss the late night talks of history, sports, religion, and politics. It made my night go by with a smile, as you always had something humorous to say about anything. Yes, I don't smile much now. It hurts, and I'm doing my best to hang in there, brother. I remember my mother's smile as a child. It comforted me when I was sick, afraid, or when I was confused and frustrated. She always said that by morning, tomorrow, the trouble would pass. I believe her, and I always went to bed feeling much better as I put my trust in God. Dan, that is what you gave me, that big, handsome smile and that grin that turned 1,000 women's heads. You had a mom's magic. I have always been proud of the achievements and accomplishments you made in life. Yet I'm sorry, Emanuel, we never wrote that book we talked about, What Happened Behind the Fence, Tales of 817 Vaughn Street. So I won't let my memories rest while you keep inspiring me. My heart and my mind remember the good you shared with me. Yes, just remember the wonderful smile of yours has made me feel warm and good and drove the terrible storms of grief from my heart. And I would appreciate the listeners for listening to me, Beth.
Ms. Alexander, that was a good description of the life that we always call him Mr. J, lived. What we're going to do right now, stay on. We have a couple of listening audience who'd like to give their respect to Mr. J. We're going to call a 6057, call a 6057. Welcome to MPH Radio.
Thanks for having me. And, the thing I remember most about Mr. Joyner is his commitment, to improving the conditions of Africans throughout the U.S. in particular and the world in general. And, you know, he is greatly missed. And, you know, and, you know, may his the works that he did continue in memory for eternity.
Thank you, Carla. Let's go to one of our members, bring Susie in. Susie, your thoughts on the legacy of Mr. Joyner?
One thing about Mr. Joyner, I miss whenever we met or we talked on the telephone, sometimes he'd get long-winded, but he always had a story that had some significance as to what was going on in the communities, which I appreciated. In the beginning, it was a little to get used to, you know, but he would tell us the stories, and they'd have laughter, and there'd be some sadness as well as with everything. But one thing Mr. Joyner wanted us, especially missing pages in history, to know is don't sit down and wait for the opportunities to come. We had to get up and make them. And that's one thing I appreciated, and I really miss him because I know he'd have a lot of advice on different avenues we could venture into this day and time. Rest in peace, Mr. J.
And that is so true about Mr. J. He definitely was one who was willing to serve and direct, and you were very important of being able to initiate and get this radio program off as well as this organization. And we will never forget him. And he has left us a blueprint to follow, and we're going to follow that blueprint. Alexander, in closing, can you just make a few statements about how can we best serve the legacy of Mr. J from your perspective? What can the people do?
Yes, I would say to serve the greatest moments of my brother's legacy would be to go and vote next year. That is an important thing that many Africans died over, and I expect to see my people, and not only my people, but every race that's in America, to go forward and cast that vote. And look into your heart firstly and say, are we better than we were 3 years ago? And if you can't say that we were in a better spot than we were 3 or 4 years ago, then cast that vote for the one that you believe that can turn this country around. We in dire needs of good leadership. And the only way we're going to get it is we got to vote for it. So that means the senators, that means the governors, that means the House of Representatives, that means the president and vice president and whoever's running for whatever office, we got to make better choices. And those choices come from the heart, not from all the news media, not from all the people running for office promising the moon, but we actually got to vote for common sense.
Mr. Alexander, we'd like to thank you for giving your time and your history of having a working relationship with your brother, Mr. Joyner, and to the family on behalf of MPH, would you please share our love with them? Tell them that we will never forget Mr. J, and we will continue to carry out his legacy. And we'd like, again, thank you for your contribution to today's program.
And I thank you.
I thank you. All right, audience, you listen to MPH Radio. What we're going to do right now, we just did a little tribute to Emmanuel D. Joyner. He was a very important person who made many contributions to his community, not only in the past, but the contribution that he made in the past is still having a positive impact on our people in the future. We'd like to just acknowledge again this transition that took place on August the 22nd, 2018. He was born May the 10th, 1945. And when we talk about Mr. J, we also can't leave out Mrs. J, his wife, Rita May Joyner, who also made her transition on April 15, 2017, 1 year before him. We'd like to thank them both for their contribution to humanity, particularly to underserved communities, and the role that they have played to help create and develop MPH, Missing Pages of History. So right now what we're going to do, we're going to a station break, and when we come back, we have a special message from the hip-hop community with Sister Elizabeth, and then we'll continue our theme with Brother Mayor as we talk about this question of people who have made a difference past and present. This is MPH Radio. We'll be right back.
Tennessee.
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 Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force of truth. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee. Country and into more countries, baptized birth into rhythm, where the ghosts of childhood haunted. Walk the road my forefathers walk, climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came, my family tree, my family name. For some strange reason it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
Welcome back to MPH Radio. Take me to another land. Take me back to the family tree. There's so much we can learn from our family tree. We'd like to welcome you back again to MPH Radio right now. We'd like to cover all sectors of our community. We have created a special segment for the hip-hop community where they come and speak truth through power and share their wisdom with us. Right now we have a hip-hop artist with us, Sister June Elizabeth. She's going to give us some perspective from the hip-hop community. Welcome, June, to MPH Radio.
Peace and love. How you doing, Brother Lee?
Doing great. Doing great. What you have for our listening audience from the hip-hop community?
Okay, so today I want to talk about love. First of all, we need to love ourselves before we can love anything else, whether it's another person or our environment that we live in. And I wanted to hit on this subject mainly because of what's going on in the Amazon forest right now. It's been burning for 3 weeks without any intervention. Like, no one has come to, you know, make a extreme change and help out that community. And it's not an isolated event. It's something that's going on in the forest all across the world, and it's really not getting the light that it needs. And I feel as though we have lost sight of the love for ourselves, which is taking a toll on the love for our environment that we live in. And it's just a sad thing that's going on, because it's being reported that these fires are being set intentionally to create a clear space for business, whether it's farming or, you know, industrial business, to be set into those places. And it's disturbing me, because we are willing to risk our environment for the gain of money. And like a quote that came to my mind was from the Bible, actually. It's from Mark chapter 8, verse 36. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his whole soul? And like, that just speaks to me in the sense that we have lost the love for ourselves just to gain the money. Once we get that money, where are we going to live if we have destroyed the world's lungs? And that's what, you know, we call the Amazon forest. That is the world's lungs. If this entire land is destroyed because of fire, that will create a chain effect to destroy the world that we live in today. And I just, it's really touched my heart, and I really just wanted to bring some more awareness to this that's going on, as well as to bring us back into perspective just to love ourselves so that we can take care and love the environment that we're in. And I say that to say that I just want to share just a verse of this song that I wrote called Just Love. And it goes like this. What the world needs now is love, sweet, sweet love. What the world needs now is love, sweet, sweet love. What the world needs now is a little love. Put some peace in the air, let it fly like doves. What the world needs now is a mother's hug. But why we always turn to the mother drugs, that ain't the answer. Letting hate spread like cancer. I shut up in your bones, I stuck up in your mold. But it all starts at the base. If there is no love, there is no faith. Put it all together and watch us levitate. Yeah, I just think that we need that love within ourselves, and we can spread that across the world and into our homes and into our environments and make this world a better place. Thank you so much, Brother Lee.
Thank you, Sister June Elizabeth. Brothers and sisters, you have heard it from the hip-hop community. What the world needs is love. And on that note, we're going to share this aspect of love. And when we come back, we have Brother Mel Smith. He's going to talk a little bit about people who have made a difference, past and present. He's going to speak to the theme in reference to his history, because he is one of those that best typify this whole concept of making a difference. So we're going to take a station break, and we'll be right back. You'll listen to MPH Radio. And stay together. That's what we need. We need the unity among our people, among our communities, to make things better. And right now, we're going to make the transition to talk about our theme, people have made a difference, past and present. And what we have done was we have chosen Brother Mel Smith, who typifies this particular theme. This brother has made many contributions to our community in the past, and he's also doing it at the present time. We're going to talk to him about some different issues based upon his understanding, his experiences, and we want to use this information as a guiding tool to move our people forward. So right now, we would like to introduce Brother Melvin W. Smith to MPH. We'd like to welcome you, Brother Mel. How are you doing today?
Hey, some of it is good, Lee. I'm working on the rest.
Brother Mel, real briefly, you're an educator, you're a writer, you're organized, many things. Just give us a couple things about your background so I listen to audience who may have never heard you before know who you are. How would you describe yourself?
Well, I describe myself as a man of some parts. I've been those things. I've worked at as an educator, and I've done a little writing. Worked as an organizer and a director of organizers, as an administrator in community, in nonprofit agencies, and in action projects and communities. And much of that's been done from coast to coast, from Boston in Massachusetts, where I live now, and it's been many years, earlier years, in the Springfield, Massachusetts area, and from there across the country to Oakland, California, and back across the continent to Washington, D.C. area, and the early days in Philadelphia, and earlier days in Virginia, in Southern Virginia, Brunswick County, as a student schoolboy. And some of what I'm interested in talking about today is has to do with that Virginia community that I attended elementary school and started high school in, and that was the community that surrounded St. Paul's College, which is defunct now. It was closed a few years ago. It's one of the historically black colleges and universities that wasn't able to make it. And talk about the man who began that project, James Solomon Russell.
Let's start right there. Let's talk about this whole question of your perspective on the standards of African and black universities. And in your case particularly, talk about the struggles and the history of the closing of St. Paul and what we can learn from it. What can we take from it?
Well, there's some things that are still questionable about it. But first I have to kind of understand what it was. James Solomon Russell's an Episcopal priest who began that project. He began a parish there in Lawrenceville, and he established a school, which was at first a vocational high school, St. Paul's, with trades in order to get people prepared for work in various areas of labor and professional labor. And that school began as St. Paul's Normal and Industrial School. And in 1941, it became St. Paul's Polytechnic Institute. They added some of the liberal arts and the teaching courses and the like. So it became an academic and vocational school at that time. And 1957, it became St. Paul's College, and it became strictly liberal arts school, and they dispensed with the trades at the college, the trades going to the newly built high school named for James Solomon Russell, and trades were at the high school but no longer at the college. Well, that whole project included an elementary school on the campus of St. Paul's, which I attended first through seventh grades, and it was called the St. Paul's Practice School. and many of the teachers in training in the college did their practice teaching at that elementary school, which was staffed by some superb teachers, all of which were African American. Administration of African American, everything was African American on that college campus. And in addition to elementary school, they had high school, the St. Paul's High School, before the building of the new James Solomon Russell High School. The high school graduated numerous students, many of whom continued on to go to the college. And so you had here an institution that was providing a K through higher education experience for many people in the area and from elsewhere around the country. The local area people included folks who in my day in elementary school, many of my schoolmates had to leave school for times of the year in order to go out into the fields with their parents, to help their parents in the fields in tobacco and cotton. And they had either it was chopping time or it was harvest time or whatever, and they missed the days in school, sometimes weeks, and had to come back and try to catch up. Well, because of the quality of the teachers and the caring of the teachers and administration in those places, many of those students did catch up, and some of them were some of the most outstanding students as well. So this provided a great source of prosperity in terms of peoplehood and in terms of prospects and opportunity in the region. And of course, many of the students coming to the college, and some of those even coming to the high school, came, you know, as far away as New York City and Chicago and other far-flung places, coming to a place of black excellence and refuge. So there was a great effect, a positive effect in the development of that region and for black people in general, as was intended to have for the historically black colleges and universities. I did not experience the integration period there because I had moved on. I had left. I did not graduate from Solomon Russell High School, although I attended Solomon Russell High, and I was an athlete and scholar and a leader in organizations there. In fact, in my last years there, our basketball league got switched to the Big City League, and we played Maggie Walker and Armstrong in Richmond, for example, in those years. But I moved on and finished high school in Philadelphia. The St. Paul's experience that I had was good. Exceptional. I was able to, as a result of that schooling at St. Paul's and Russell High School, I was able to enter the famous, prominent Central High School of Philadelphia, one of the oldest public high schools in the United States, an exam school, and one of the highest merit scholarship winning schools in the nation, and with a faculty, quite a number of PhDs on the faculty, and a student body that was recognized as the top academic school in Philadelphia and around the nation. We compared ourselves there with the Bronx School of Science in New York City, which was Brother Kwame Ture's alma mater. The Bronx School of Science, on the year I graduated, won fewer merit scholarships than Central High, my school, did, and that was bragging rights. So the point is that the black basis in Lawrenceville, Virginia, with the St. Paul's Practice School and the Solomon Russell High School, in my experience, for my particular benefit, what allowed me to compete with these people who were considered the highest level scholars in the city of Philadelphia and arguably around the country. This was the basis that was provided by those black teachers and administrators and that community in general. The later integration of the high school perhaps did not affect St. Paul's so much, but the community at large was affected severely. St. Paul's continued for a number of years until lack of funds and internal problems, including some corruption, greed, mismanagement, led to a downward spiral. And it was a long process over a number of years, over a decade, in which the school was placed on probation and was nearing failure, financial and academic. And finally, that came to pass. One of its presidents, in particular, was arrested and prosecuted at a later post in Texas, I believe, a college in Texas, for doing some of the things that he had done at St. Paul's in terms of embezzlement and the like. But he was not the primary cause of the college's failure, just an additional factor, that's all. And that's one of the factors. The matter of integration and the matter of, I guess, the historically black college and its value in a racist society is something that we do need to talk about more.
Yeah, you know, one of the Normans. That's one of the ways how to describe African universities today is that they are institutions that are no longer relevant, not needed. What would you say to that narrative?
I would say, I mean, there's this this is one argument that's being made by a lot, but this is almost like that we are in a post-racial America. It's kind of like that. There is a problem with the historical black college and university in that, it, to some extent and to a large extent in some cases, they are missionary-type schools that exist mainly to prepare people to serve in the empire, to be good and loyal servants into a continuing a racist and a warmongering and capitalist empire. And that there is no real interest or effort in training students for a self-determining African reality. That is perhaps understandable, but I think that there is a need for schools that could and would be about the business of equipping black students to think outside of this imperialist box and recognize the Pan-African vision that has, you know, been brought to us all through the centuries and through years by many of our most outspoken and courageous leaders we do have, the leaders such as, to name just a few, Garvey and Marcus Garvey and Malcolm X and Kwame Ture, and to name just a very few, that we have, we do not have universities, colleges that are emphasizing that vision. And there are many of us who think that vision is the most important for us as far as any real liberation is concerned.
You know, Brother Mayor, there's is an ongoing discussion of revising and reassessing history. And one of the aspects of our history since we've been here in the U.S. has been a struggle around this question of integration. There are people who are making an assessment that as of today, based on their years of living and looking at some of the end results, the integration was a mistake for African people here in this country. How do you view this question of integration, and was it the correct decision, yes or no?
Well, it certainly depends on the circumstances. In that Virginia community we just been talking about, there was that, you know, before I left to go north, among my own family, many of whom were educators, teachers, and administrators, and there was a discussion. Many of them were members of the NAACP and other civic organizations, and there was this question of the oncoming integration and whether or not it was good, and they had worries about it. They expressed worries about it, but they thought that it was an opportunity to gain access to resources that they did not have, that they would have more access to the resources of the larger national society by so doing. But they were not confident. They were not ecstatic about it, and they had their reservations about it. In later years, I heard them express, and others who were part of the process of the integration, many black teachers lost their jobs in the integration process because they were given jobs to white folks first and foremost. And in some cases, if not many cases, there were white folks who were less qualified and certified than black teachers. They'd worked hard going to Columbia during summers to get their master's degrees and all the rest of it, and who were, you know, very competent teachers. But that in later years had been regretted by many because of what had happened was that the resources, for the most part, were lost. The resources that black communities had were lost overall, not just in school integration, but the general so-called integration in society. Black people no longer held on to some of the institutions that they had, and that included some the business community, which lost out a great deal. It represented itself as more of an assimilation, and not one that resulted in a black community having more access to resources of its own, or the development of resources of its own. So in that sense, a self-determination was diluted, and was not integration was not conducive to black folks gaining really the black power that was, you know, enunciated during the 60s. And in fact, that some of that black power call really was a call to enhance that aspect of black struggle and develop the resources of our own, but the integration did not do that for us. But that's to the satisfaction of a great many people, and black people as well, who have, some of whom have gained prosperity through the integrated action, and who prefer that and call, you know, the separation, the idea of separation, as something foul and misguided. But I think there's a difference in segregation and separation, in that the old regime of segregation was one of domination by one group or the other. The whole claim of separate but equal was a lie. It was never equal, never intended to be, because psychologically, white supremacy demands that there be a an inferior and superior recognition. And therefore, our drinking fountains in Lawrenceville were very distinctly different in the colored and the white drinking fountains. We're not equal, if, for one simple example. And in many other ways, it was obvious it was never equal. So segregation is imposed by one group on another, and it's a matter of domination and power. Separation is, you know, when groups want to be separate, can be good if there is power sufficient for each group to maintain its own welfare, to develop itself on its own agenda. And that makes the idea of a separation rather than integration something viable, I think, that could work. But we are dealing with power here, and so that has many other ramifications. You have to be able to make it happen.
You know, Brother Mill, one of the things I was thinking about when I was thinking about earlier honoring Brother Emmanuel Joyner, what would he say to this statement I'm going to make to you, and I'd like to hear your response. Mr. Joyner was real clear in terms of understanding the importance of understanding history and speaking truth to power and not being afraid to speak to reality. Now, I'm sort of at a loss, and I'd like for you to speak to this issue. This year, there is a celebration, a commemoration of the 400 years of the so-called first enslavement of African brought to Jamestown here in Virginia, and they're making it a celebration. I'm trying to figure out what is so great a celebrating an enslaved human being, taking him away from his home, and treat him like anything but a human being. Why are many African people and communities participate in this type of celebration? I'd just like to hear your response to that.
Right. Well, it's not so much a celebration, except that it is by those who are organizing it and promoting it. They're claiming that. That this year of 1619 should be recognized as the founding date for the United States of America rather than 1776. And what they're saying is that because the first Africans were brought to these shores in 1619, that date should be celebrated because African Americans have been foundational in the development of this nation and its democracy. And in other words, they're saying that black people have as much right to the flag as anybody else, and have been the protectors of democracy, that black people have been the protectors of democracy, and that this is why they're citing 1619. And in the process, they've got a whole lot of stuff going on in terms of publication, in terms of interviews, in terms of video production. And it's just, it is a major project. It was initiated by the New York Times. And it is, and they have some tremendous historical material available. They're making it available, and they're bringing out a whole lot about the atrocity of slavery and the absolute lies that have been told to cover up slavery and to cover up the effects of it on the black people and et cetera, et cetera. So. They have a lot of good stuff going on, and it is just amazing. USA Today has joined in. They have some publication stuff. They have New York Times related outfit called the Pulitzer Center. I guess they're the ones who do the Pulitzer Prize, I guess. But they are engaged in doing tours. They're setting up a tour to colleges and museums and libraries, and they have a young woman who is pretty much out front of this, all of this, nicknamed Nicole Hannah Jones. She's a New York Times writer, apparently. But it's a big project, and it has taken on all kinds of favorable support by, you know, by mainstream media, liberal mainstream media. Of course, it's getting a lot of flack from right-wing and conservatives because a lot of it is bringing out real history, real history. And they're doing, there's a good job at bringing out a lot of real history, but it's, it has one major problem, and I see it as the reason it's getting so much favorable support from the liberal element, and that is, it is couching everything in terms of an allegiance to the flag, claiming the American flag and patriotism, and this is going along with almost a disavowal of an African, Pan-African vision. It is pretty much an acceptance of a nation that has rejected us and is claiming that we are such a great part in developing this nation that we deserve to be recognized as that. And it does not take into account the need for a greater vision for black people. In fact, much of the stuff that I have read thus far just refers to us as black Americans with very little African or African-American reference. And it is it seems to disavow the protest of the anthem and the flag, such as Kaepernick, represented in favor of claiming love for this flag and using our history to do that. I have a problem with it on that basis.
Okay, on that note, this is MPH Radio. We're going to take a quick station break, and when we come back, if you have any comments or questions you'd like to make, when we come back, please do so by calling in at 818-337-0016. 818-337-0016. Hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last four numbers. We'll be right back. This is Missing Pages of History.
One would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you love your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? People must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation
would make a better society. Now some of us would rather cuss and make a fuss than to bring about a little trust. But we shall overcome, I believe, someday, if you'll only listen to what I have to say.
And how long have you had your white teacher?
Who told you you love
your black preachers? Can you respect your brother's woman friend and share with black folks not of kin? I say now people must prove to the people
a better day is coming
for you and for me. With just a little bit more education
and love for our nation,
we'll make a better society.
And if you
would like to welcome you back to MPH Radio, and interesting question, if you had a choice of color today, which one would you recognize? Which one you say correct? Which one would you say would be indifferent to what you think is correct? Be interested. If you had a choice of color, which one would you choose, people? We'll go back to Brother Mel. Brother Mel, we just what we would like to do at this point in time, we have our next guest on. I think we will have Brother Haywood, who just logged in. We'll be coming shortly to him. We tell him, hold on. Your final thoughts in terms of this whole question of looking at what's going on today in today's world for underserved communities. What advice you could give them today in terms of how can we go about organize ourselves to make sure we're in a position to protect ourselves and protect our interests and get equal rights and be treated as human beings?
I would remind all of us that change today has to come from the bottom up, the ground, the grassroots, that is organizing among ourselves accordingly and developing leadership from among ourselves accordingly, the leadership that can be known, trusted, and supported wholeheartedly accordingly, and that we need to make sure that we can maintain bridges between the generations in this process of organizing for change and for survival, beyond survival, but development, and the bridges that allow the younger generations to get the benefit of the experience and the mistakes and the successes of the older generations, so that they can move with that in their armament to some effective organizing and development of power and carry out an agenda for liberation and justice. We have to make sure that we are have a vision, a Pan-African vision, which can affect positively all those others in the world as well. But we have to take care of our own business, and our own business goes beyond this United States of America, and which is often referred to as America, as though it's the entire hemisphere. But this United States is just one batch. It's like we are like a tribe here. Maybe we should recognize ourselves as a tribe of African Americans who has some special experience to bring to the other tribes of Africa around the world, in the diaspora and on the motherland continent. We have that vision, and if we can continue to learn, lifelong learning, make sure that we maintain an emphasis on action and intellectual activity, then we can have an opportunity to go into the future with some success and effectiveness.
All right, on that note, Brother Mayor, we'd like to thank you for today's contribution to our program. Continue to be a positive influence. we're in our community and for all of humanity. We thank you for coming on MPH Radio. We thank you.
Hey, thank you, Lee.
We now make our transition to our person of the month. We have Brother Haywood is on the line. He also typifies our theme today, people who have made a difference in the past and at the present. We have Brother Haywood. He has been a very positive force within our communities. We'd like to do a little profile with our brother, talk to him about some things in his profession that you may have never even thought about. He is full of information knowledge. So right there, let's welcome Brother Haywood Watkins to MPH Radio. Brother Haywood, welcome to MPH Radio.
Thank you for having me on. I am glad to be a part of this and to share what little information I have that might encourage anyone in the field of professionalism or what they can do for the community and how to empower themselves.
Okay, Brother Haywood, before we speak directly to the issue, we're going to let you share with our audience. We want to know, who is Brother Haywood? You have done so many things, accomplished so many things. Will you just share a little bit of some of the positive things you have developed, you have accomplished, and been a positive influence for our communities?
I've been in the beauty industry for 50 years. I had the opportunity to work with one of the number one clipper company in the world, which is Wall Clipper Corporation, and happened to be the senior educator to travel to different countries and in the United States to show professionalism and the art of creating styles for individuals. A lot of the pictures that they see in barbershops and beauty salons, not only I've done the photo work, but I had the opportunity of getting other people's work to be shown. I've happened to, in my photography work as well, had a chance to do Oprah Winfrey's makeup artist, Roosevelt Cartwright, at his wedding, and different entertainers over the years I've done some work with. Patti LaBelle, Dionne Warwick, in the different movies, Barbershop, Nutty Professor. This latest one, the series on Central Park 5, some of my work is in there. Just had great opportunities and tried to capitalize on it. And coming from a tobacco field country in Virginia, small town, Cambridge, Virginia, to make it from where I was and to be where I am now, it's truly a blessing. And learn to always be humble, but strive to better everything you do. But not so much accolades, just giving a little idea that I had some exposure. As I think about different things, you know, working with Paul Mitchell back in 72, but it's not about, I'm just giving a little idea of what I've done.
And that is excellent. And we also appreciate, for those who don't know you, you have always been a very modest and humble brother. And that's a good positive trait. Brother Haywood, in terms of this question of how to be a professional, this question of being a professional hairstylist and what we can learn in that industry and stuff, can you talk about a little bit about that? How do one be a professional?
Well, they have to understand the total concept of professionalism. One is to prepare yourself with knowledge for the health of the individual before you even render service. And that goes along with not trying to infect one when you are rendering service, because there's so many different traits that people are taking around now that can be infected another person. So your instruments, what you're using, of cleanliness. Professionalism is making sure you're rested, prepared to render service, and understand the art of what an individual needs. You try to show where they are, that you can render the service, but you try to enhance them to have a modernized look and give them what corporations want. You can give your own identity for themselves, but understand how society is, what's best at different levels. And rendering service to individuals, it's a rewarding experience to enhance someone's look and their feeling about themselves. So it's upon anyone who is in the profession to look for those traits and to study not only facial features, the hair textures, their job status, and the temperament of how much time they plan to spend with their hair to maintain it. That has a lot to do with professionalism.
Brother Haywood, in terms of your expertise, what things can you tell about a person when you look at their hair? We had a discussion earlier, and you mentioned some interesting stuff that I never knew of. And our audience would be interested in some of the things that someone of your skill can share with the audience on. What can you tell about a person's hair and how to maintain after hair?
Okay. A lot of times, one is you look for your facial features. Sometimes hair needs to lay opposite of a growth. It's one side is larger than the other. You try to camouflage it, especially with longer hair. Then to where you have areas what they call alopecia areata. That's those areas where it bends, or they're bald areas. And you can do another style to hide that area, to enhance a person. You want to minimize where the thinning area and try to maximize it by covering it. So, those points won't be brought up. Even like with a mustache and ladies' eyebrows, those two are like balancing to polish a look on a person. A man may look at a woman, if her eyebrows are done well, they can respect that. And when a female looks at a man, they can look at a polished mustache or beard. So that's that grooming part of things that need to always be in place. And to have a style that was done at a different era for the different movements we had. When we had the natural, which was the afro, and its fullness to show the beauty that we possess. Now it's the action what we do. It's not so much the fullness of it, but it's the style that we can wear it in, the different twists that give a spiral look. The different colors you can do to enhance, to modernize the look. So, and the aging process, when we want to take those golden growths of gray away to stay, have that youthful look of appearance, that can be done as well. So those are just some of the things.
And Brother Haywood, historically one of our most, I would say, safest and comfortable institutions that we have had among ourselves, they have been barbershops and beauty salons, where we could come in and we could feel like family and we could discuss things openly. Do you find that atmosphere still exists today? And what are some of the things that you have learned from the community by the various people that you have interacted with when they come into your shop and sit there and have
especially in the black community, it's for the men, it was our only, what they call the clubhouse, where we could open dialogue, vent with issues that are going on, and get different broads' opinion without, and feeling comfortable at the same time. And to educate and formulate, a lot of the movements was in barbershops where they could meet and get ideas and get structures of what to do for the next movement and to enhance the youth that's coming up. Because when men are around men, the boys are there, it's our responsibility to give them ideas and to show them to carry themselves in a manly manner. We've had movements over the years. I met Stokely Carmichael years ago when I was coming up at my home. But when you brought him to the salon, the barbershop, I was totally impressed of you being so active in what you do out here in the community. And I try to do the same thing. We had a meeting not long ago with the mayor or some of the city officials about this common sense law about guns. And we plan to do some actions as we speak. If you have as many as 10,000 barbers and beauticians, and each one of them reach 25 people, with that multitude of people, we can make a movement just alone to people who are making decisions for their well-being instead of for ours. We be in the position to vote them out, because they are recognized and they have a fear of when you have power enough of numbers that you can make decisions over them opposed to them making decisions over us. And these things that in the beauty industry, we get a chance to sit and collectively do the ground root work that we need to do to make things collectively move in the direction that we feel it should be.
You know, Brother Haywood, as a photographer, when you take pictures, we understand the power of images and stuff. But when you take pictures of things, how do you make sure you get the essence of what you're trying to shoot to bring the best out of a people, out of a person? What's the secret to that? Like, we have seen some of your work and it has been excellent. But how do you create that kind of eye to bring out the kind of things that you want to bring out when you're dealing with individuals, peoples, et cetera?
Well, I found out some you have to study. You learn under, there's a young lady who used to teach at BCU. She was a black instructor. Her name was Deborah Dilworth. I challenged her from my self-training and tried to pick up different points. There's another guy named Pete back in the 70s, 71, 72, who used to work at the post office. And I'm going to get to your point, but I'm going to give you some root information how I've gotten the way I am in photography. He taught me understanding how to develop pictures and make the black skin look beautiful, because the film was not developed for us. And my father was taking pictures when I was coming up as a kid. He was in this education department in schools, but one of his hobbies was taking pictures. And when you read and you find out, pictures lock and hold memories and lock time. And when you study people's personalities for their humor, the laughter, the joy, you try to lock in what you see. And you see the depth of a person in deep thoughts. And then you take pictures of generations showing the same personality from the elder ones to the ones in the youth, and you put them side by side so they can see the sameness of generations, that people have certain characteristics that they are born with, and they don't know how they got there, but it's the same ones of their adults, family members. And it's a study process. Instead of just picking it up, just shooting it, you have to see it. And I'm going through a series now trying to shoot the soul of a person to show the depth of an individual. Just like Martin Luther King, there's a picture of him with his hand holding his face under his chin. There's one of Malcolm X, same picture, same pose. And then those are, it's called the thinker, almost to the thinker look, and understand those concepts. And so that's, it's some people are gifted with it. Some you have to study to improve, and then you try to capture that moment that you might not ever get again. So it's a continual process of growth and trying to develop to be better.
Now, for people who may would like to acquire your expertise in terms of the field of professional hairstylist or photography, how could they do that? How could they contact you? How could they invite you to come to their schools, their churches, their community? Because you do such an excellent job in those areas with your expertise.
Well, I give you the telephone number. I give the address where I work. And I'm always open to share and set up time and go through the processes of being creative with photography. I can also try to set up so far as hair knowledge and to get in that career. And it's one thing I want to talk about hair. And it's so much that we need to be educated in or be reprogrammed. When so many people use the hair that's in hair locks, we call it dreadlocks. And Europeans saw it years ago, many years ago, and they thought it was so dreadful. And that's where that word came up from. But it's not dreadful. And it's not to be called dreadlocks. It's called hair locks. Anything that's intertwined together is a lock. So it just happened to be hair. So it's a hair lock opposed to a dreadlock. So as we be informed and we learn more about ourselves and know who we are, opposed to people saying what we are, the true beauty that we possess needs to flourish. It needs to illuminate. It needs to go out and shine the beauty that we know. And I'm going to give a number, if that's all right, my telephone number.
Yes, that'll be fine.
Okay, it's
in the contract number
804. It's 804-241-6120. And place of employment, it's called Haywood's Hair Images. It's 2201 Sims Avenue, Richmond, Virginia, and zip code 23225.
And on that note, Brother Haywood, we'd like to thank you for making your contribution to today's program. You are most definitely represent this whole concept of people who have made a difference in the past as well as in the present. Again, we thank you for your contribution and to our listening audience. If you're online listening to your program, you will need to go on the phone and dial in at 1-818-337-0016. We will go over a few minutes, so you need to dial in right away if you want to continue to hear this particular program. If not, you can always go to our archive at blogtalkradio/missing-pages-of-history-inc. So we're going to pause for the station break, and when we come back, we're going to do our final closing on how you can support MPH. We'll be right back. This is MPH Radio. Remind you again that we come on every other week. We have open membership drive. We'll be going back to our quarterly regular fundraising drive starting next month, so keep your ears and your eyes out and open. But more importantly, we will be starting our Open School Adopt a Program project, classroom project this fall. We need help, need support, so please come and join us. We can't do no more than what the people are willing to do in terms of their support. Again, we'd like to thank everybody listening to MPH. Until next time at 1 p.m., we ask you to please continue to go forward ever and backward never and be a positive force within your community. Until next time, we thank you. Let's continue to move forward ever and backward never. You've been listening to MPH Radio. Continue through the development of missing pages of history.